So the overall theme that we're going to be following here in the short sessions we have at lunch, I have entitled Church Friendly. Church Friendly. Despite the brevity of my time, I would like to ask your input on this. I'd like you to describe for me, between bites, the friendly church. What are some characteristics that make that causes you to think that a church is friendly? Okay, they'll scoot down the middle of the pew. All right. They greet you. Okay.
Smiles.
Eye contact. Now, so when you're coming in as a visitor, people are actually acknowledging that you're present and they look at you. Okay, very good. What else?
They leave you a place to park.
They leave you a place to park. All right. You invite them back again. All right, this is excellent. Anything else? Yes, ma'am.
You don't have a special seat that if someone needs to sit down, you don't have to give it to them.
Good. So that's kind of the corollary to this. Not only do you move in, but if somebody is there a minute and a half before you and they sit in your seat, that you ignore that and you certainly do not say anything about it. All right, very good. Anything else? All right, my list said it's a church that's interested in people. It's genuine. There is a sustained effort. So when they come back, you continue to show that friendliness. And bonus points if you remember names, right? No prejudice, no favoritism. You know, sometimes we'll do that. If somebody looks like they're not dressed as well, is that in the Bible somewhere? Somebody looks really nice and you give them a good place to sit and give them attention, and somebody who's a little less so? I believe James has something to say about that in chapter 2. Hospitable. So that extends beyond the time together. And you taking them somewhere offsite, into your home or to the restaurant. Is visibly friendly. And this was mentioned. Face, eyes, gestures, body language. Now, Tom Rainier is a man who has done a lot of study in trends in Christendom as a whole. And there's something that he calls the biggest lies in church. You know what he says the biggest lies in churches is? We are the friendliest church in town. He has literally investigated thousands of churches, but he didn't interview the people. He may have gone to some of those places, but he interviewed the people that went there. And in almost every case, he found from them that they were not very friendly at all. So what we're going to do is talk about three things, and I think the lessons will make more sense as we deliver them. Today's lesson I'm entitled, and this is if you're writing and taking notes on the back side of this sheet that says, lift up your eyes. The first thing you got to do is to take the step. So that's what we're going to talk about today is taking the step, and that's forgetting self. That's the step you've got to take. Now, I'm going to take just a moment to explain the double meaning of church friendly. Now, we use some terminology, don't we, to talk about interacting with others. And one of the terms that we use is user-friendly. For a church to be church-friendly, it needs to be user-friendly. And that's helpful in a lot of different ways. We want to explain why we do what we do and help to make New Testament Christianity itself to be clear and plain. So it might be helpful, for example, every once in a while, for either the man making the announcements or an elder or the preacher to, in the matter of course, or the man who's presiding over the Lord's Supper to say, we are taking the Lord's Supper today as the early church did upon the first day of every week. Or you may have noticed something different about our singing today and walk through that, right, periodically. Because you have new people among you each and every time, as we'll talk about. So that's what a one idea of church friendly. But the main idea that I want us to look at is the idea that we want to be a church that's friendly. That's accomplished in a lot of different ways. By accommodating, by helping guests and newcomers to know what's going on, to know what we're about. All right, so what are some of the reasons that people give for not approaching visitors?
Shy.
I'm shy. I think it's probably the biggest one. I'm an introvert. All right. Okay, the embarrassment. I'm already supposed to know their name, and maybe they've already been here 3, 4, 10 times, and I haven't gone up to them, and I don't want them to feel unvalued, or and I don't want to be embarrassed. So I'm just going to avoid the awkward elephant in the room that we both know exists. That I don't know their name and they don't know mine, but I see them. I pass them. Anything else? Why don't we approach visitors? And I say, it's a good question, because a lot of people don't approach visitors. So why?
The preacher will do it.
Right? That's why we pay him. To be friendly for us. No, we don't think that, but we're assuming the preacher may be doing that, right? Too busy talking to the regular members. Hey, we got, especially if you're busy, you're in the core, you got a checklist. There's things you got to get done, right? And it's good stuff. Maybe you have to help find somebody to be a Bible class teacher. Maybe, you know, there's somebody who's been sick and they're back at church. A lot of good reasons. And on our way to accomplish that, we walk past new members or visitors. Yes, ma'am. Good. We're not friendly in the world, and so we bring that with us. And you know, that's a great observation. I heard an elder when I preached out in Colorado who talked about us being more functional as a family. He says, but you know, a lot of times when we come to Christ, or even if we grew up in the church, we are the products of dysfunction, right? We don't know how to interact in other relationships. We think that somehow automatically when we get in the meeting house that we're going to be functional. And that may be something that requires us to do some learning and some growing and some developing. Yes, ma'am. Commonality. We don't feel like we have things in common with that. That's an excellent point. A lot of our visitors are going to be in different life stages. They're going to be in different circumstances. We may make some judgments on our part that we may not have as much in common. And maybe we feel like maybe somebody who maybe does will be doing that. And they have some of these other reasons why they're not going up there, and we miss that opportunity. A lot of reasons that people give. I don't really want us to focus on that, because we can give ourselves excuses all day. And I think we're already doing this as we go through them. We're starting to look through them and say they're really not what we ought to do. You know, in 1 Peter 2:21, Peter is talking about the fact that Christ is our example. And in context, we need to understand, it's talking about suffering. These Christians were going to be made to suffer, and they needed to walk in Jesus' step who suffered for us. But it's an application that's good in any forum, that Jesus is the perfect example, whatever we're talking about. And I want you to think about how Jesus was with people. As Jesus was in his ministry, I want you to notice that certainly he carved out some significant time for leadership training as he walked with the apostles and as he spent time with them. And he had an inner circle that he spent even more time with. But you will not find Jesus pairing himself off into very exclusive, small relationships. You'll find him going out, and you know who he's looking for a lot of times? The different, the marginalized, the hurting, the otherwise seemingly insignificant. Can you think of some examples? The Samaritan woman, the woman caught in adultery, Zacchaeus, blind Bartimaeus, one of the neediest people in all of the Bible. And when he speaks in parables, he speaks sympathetically of the Lazarus with his sores laying at the rich man's gate, or the tax collector, the lowly, despised tax collector in Luke chapter 18. And so he is showing us an example. And yes, that's important for us wherever we are in life, but it's important for us in the meeting house that we focus on these precious opportunities. The Great Commission is what, in an essence? Go into all the world. But when visitors and people come to us, what is that? That's coming into all the building. That is low-hanging fruit if we've ever seen it. We need to take advantage of that. All right, so what do we do? What do we do to take this step? Number one, we need to pray. All right, so that's where it would all start. What would be productive, specific things to pray about? You think about it. Courage. Perhaps it would be clear communication. Or maybe sincerity, you want to come across genuine. Or maybe it's a prayer for your words, if you're afraid that you might not say things the way you want to say it. Or maybe you need to pray, have you thought about this, pray for others as well. Not to the neglect of yourself, but pray, Lord, please help there to be others also who will step up and out of their comfort zone. And maybe to also pray that we will create the kind of culture that makes people so impressed with the friendliness that we are emitting. We should be convicted if God expects us to be friendly and we are struggling with it. that he is expecting to hear from us about it in prayer. In Matthew chapter 7 and verse 7, I believe in context, Jesus is talking about discipleship and those who seek finding that. But he says, ask and it shall be given unto you. Seek and you shall find. If we are in desiring, knocking the door be open to you. If we're desiring to be more friendly, we need to ask. In Luke 10 and verse 2, Jesus says that I want you to look out on the fields that they're wide already into harvest. Pray the Lord of the harvest that he may send more workers out into his harvest. Maybe I need to be praying for me in that list as well. That's where it starts. Let's pray. Pray that we'll step up our game when it comes to that. Then number two, we need to seek. If we pray for opportunities, we need to see how God is opening those doors for us. I saw this in the news just a couple of years ago. You may have seen it. It was iconic. It was in a couple of news cycles. There was a state-run psychiatric hospital in Brooklyn, New York. And there was a woman who had come in for treatment there. They say that when all was said and done, she had been in there for 24 hours. And then near the end, about an hour and a half, 2 hours before the culmination of this, she fell out onto the floor. Does anybody remember that? And what happens is a couple of security guards, you can imagine a waiting room, right? And several seats in there and people coming in and out. She falls out into the floor. A couple of security guards come in. They see her and walk right past her. There's a doctor. Lady doctor comes in, walks right up to her, and then leaves. And then a nurse comes in about an hour. There's security footage showing all this. An hour later, here comes a nurse, comes up to her, takes her foot, kind of sees she's not responsive. A couple of minutes later, you see them come in with a gurney, put her on and begin treatment. But you know what? She's already dead. Guess what happened to that hospital? Sued. Oh, they were sued. Employees were fired. And the lawyer made this statement. He said that there was obviously a culture of indifference. That she came there to get treatment in the very place where she should have been made better. What happened? She was ignored. Do you remember what Jesus teaches one time in Luke chapter 10? He's talking about in verse 30, a man is asking, who's my neighbor? And Jesus responds with a parable, and he talks about a priest and a Levite there's a man, of course, who was on his way from Jericho to Jerusalem, and he falls among thieves, and they beat him, and they rob him, and they leave him half dead. And a priest happens by that way, and he passes on the other side. He's passed up by these two people you would think. They're church people, by the way. And here comes a Samaritan. Stops, takes cares of him, addresses his wounds, takes him to an inn, leaves him there. And says if there's and pays for him to be there. And he says, if you spend more than this, when I come back, I will repay you. And what's the punchline of the parable? Which of these was the neighbor? Seek. Hey, why does somebody come to the assemblies? Aren't they looking for a void to be filled? What do we sometimes refer to the church as? It's not a social club. It's a hospital. And what do we want to do when folks are among us? Oh, we want to make sure we don't ignore them. That we don't walk past them. That we don't look the other way. Because God has put an opportunity in our pathway. He needs for us. I thought about asking Dan or David or Josh, and this would be true of every congregation. Your directory is filled with people in a lot of different stations in life. And you have also, in addition to that, regular people who are among you and visiting. And that's, it's possible or probable that if I were to ask, and I would kind of cherry pick that, folks maybe who were newer Christians, folks who were shut in, folks who were non-Christian visitors, and I could give a list, and I could ask you, how many of these people do you know? And then I could produce another list and another list. Those are our opportunities. That's what we need to be seeking. Now, I want to say one other thing about that. And by the way, that lady's name is Esmond Green. I want you to remember that, Esmond Green. Who is your Esmond Green? Who is that one? And then what are you going to do about it? Remember the end of Jesus' last preparation parable in Matthew chapter 25? In verse 42, he's going to turn to those on his left hand. And what is he going to say to them? I was hungry and you gave me no food. I was thirsty and you gave me no drink. You know the rest of that, right? Okay, and how that goes is, when did we see you in this condition? And it did not minister to you. Jesus was saying, inasmuch as you did it not unto one of the least of these, you didn't do it unto me. Disciples are going to say on that day, when did I see you sick, Lord? I would have definitely helped you. I don't remember seeing you. Where were you? Could he say, I was Esmond Green. I was one of those people on that directory. I was one of those people who was regularly among you. I was sitting in the room and you ignored me. Number three, empathize. I started first grade in Barrickville, West Virginia. I moved to Cairo, Georgia in second grade and was there second through fourth grade. Went to Franklin, Georgia in fifth grade and then went to Sylvester, Georgia in sixth grade. Went back to Franklin for seventh through ninth grade and then I was in Hinesville, Georgia from 10th through the 12th grade. Now, I know most of that's Georgia. If you've ever been to West Virginia, you've ever been to Georgia, those are different culturally speaking. But even in some of those other places in Georgia, South Georgia, they call below the Nat line. I guess y'all are too, right? Below the Nat line. But then there's the north part of the state of Georgia. The cultures are different. I know what it's like to be the new kid on the block. You know, it can be very difficult to think about visitors if you have been here all of your life or have been here for a long time. We need to try to see through the eyes of others. Now, we could talk about the difference between sympathizing and empathizing. Where sympathizing is to try to feel for somebody, but with empathy, you have a little bit more direct understanding. Maybe you can relate more strongly. And maybe it's just a difference of how strongly you can relate. But the Bible speaks very highly of the idea of sympathizing. Remember in Job chapter 2 and verse 6 that the three friends of Job each came from their own place when they heard what had happened to Job and they came and the Bible says that they sympathized and they comforted him. In Psalm 69, David said, I look for those around me who would sympathize. And I really love Hebrews 4 verse 15 because it says, we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weakness. Isn't that wonderful? And a realization of that is what makes it so that we can go boldly and confidently before the very throne of God. Because of that sympathetic high priest who did so much to make sure that it happened. And then in Hebrews 10 and verse 34, the Hebrews writer commends the brethren there because he says, you showed sympathy to the prisoners. The Bible word sympathy means to suffer along with somebody, to share in the sufferings with. We need to appreciate how the people, like I mentioned earlier, may feel. It's not easy to step into a place where you don't know people. It's not easy to try to evaluate and determine some of the biggest, or in fact, we know the biggest decision of your life in an environment where you're hoping to find not just an answer, but relationships. And so, we want to try to see through their eyes. And then the last thing is we need to initiate. Don't be passive. A great many people are passive in their approach to relationships. In other words, they're waiting for others to make the first move and to take the first step. But what's the illogic of that? If everybody's doing that, nobody ever takes the first step. Somebody has got to. So why do we hesitate to make the first move to reach out to others? For the very reasons that we mentioned at the beginning of this lesson. But I want to suggest to you that each of us has got to develop alligator skin and a child's heart and then proceed. Hospitality necessitates taking the initiative. You know, we talk about that elders need to be hospitable through the years. Occasionally I've heard a member in the peanut gallery, so to speak, say, well, I don't know, that elder may not should serve because he's not very hospitable. I don't know that I've ever seen him. I don't know who goes into their home or whatever. Is it a scriptural mandate for an elder to be one who demonstrates himself to be hospitable? Yes, 1 Timothy chapter 3. Guess how many passages tell us that Christians generally are to be hospitable? 3. So we at least should be 3 times more concerned about how we're doing than how the elders are doing. Romans 12, 13, 1 Peter 4 and verse 9, Hebrews 13 and verse 2. I know the King James mistranslates Proverbs 18, 24. A man that hath friends must show himself friendly. Really what the idea is, a man of too many friends comes soon to ruin. But the idea is a sound one, isn't it? If you want to have friends, you must show yourself to be friendly. In the, hold on, 3 or 4 minutes I have left, Dan, let me give you some practical tips for that. How can you go from passive to active? Number one, have a goal. Those who aim at nothing are sure to hit it. Make a goal for times in the assemblies. Just set a goal. There's 5 minutes between Bible class and worship. Maybe the goal is I'm going to meet one person or two people. Or go through the awkwardness of introducing myself to somebody who's already a member. That's okay. Press on. Alligator skin, child's heart. Make a goal for your home. Have one person or one couple or one family over per month. Can we do that? Is that doable? Now, before you say yes or no, I've got another tip where I'm going to help you with that. Make a goal to take somebody to lunch each month or each quarter or meet for coffee. Make a goal to take out a visitor to lunch after worship once a month, once a quarter. Can we do that 4 times a year, 6 times a year? You know, if all of us took that kind of initiation, what kind of difference would it make on a church-wide level? Number two, make a plan. Don't just wish or want. Nothing gets done that way. Set aside the needed funds, perhaps, if you need to do that. Create a list and start working it. Number three, forget yourself. Don't think about your inadequacies, whether that's physically or financially or socially. Focus on the other person. That's a Philippians 2, 3, and 4 principle we mentioned yesterday. I don't have time to go into it, but I'll recommend, what is Philip to you? Is he your great nephew? Philip Jenkins?
Yes.
Okay, great book entitled Lunch Ladies. And the premise is, how many of you are familiar with that book, Lunch Ladies? I would think that some of our young people might be, but I don't know. So when you were in junior high, senior high, did you remember how that was? You get your tray and where'd you go? You go sit with your group, right? The jocks, the nerds, the rednecks, this ethnicity, that ethnicity, whatever it is. You know who everybody associated with? The lunch ladies. You had to walk past them, right? They served anybody and everybody. That's us, right? We're to forget ourselves and to serve. And what a difference that'll make. And then I've actually got five of these. Number four, use your resources. You know, it's not my car, my house, my money. It's God's. Use it for Him. And then finally, number five, focus on the offer of hospitality and friendliness, not on your own self-imposed expectations. I'll close with this. The first house that Kathy and I lived in or owned was a little Cape Cod. And I don't know if they're all this small, but ours was all bedrooms. It was less than 1,300 square feet. And yet, you know, as the preacher, we really want to get to know the congregation. And so we decided we would systematically go through the alphabet. And so we'd have A through D over to our house, for example. We didn't even have a den. We'd have about 15 to 25 people into our homes. And guess what we discovered? People didn't care. They didn't care that it was such a small house. And we knew that several of our members had a lot bigger houses. They just loved the fellowship. Baptisms resulted as doing that. People placed membership. People grew in their relationship with God, not because of us, but because we got past the fact that it doesn't matter what we have to offer. It's what we're offering beyond ourselves that people want so much. I'll end with this. In 1979, Kim Lineham broke the world record for the women's 1,500-meter freestyle. And to achieve this, the 18-year-old had to swim 7 to 12 miles a day. A reporter interviewed her and asked her what was the hardest part of the regimen. You know what it was? Getting in the water. What's the hardest part of being friendly? Taking the first step, but get in the water. Take the step. Oh, what a difference it'll make eternally. Wouldn't it be wonderful In eternity, in heaven, to be walking with somebody who came into our midst as a visitor, and because of God working through your willingness, they obeyed the gospel. Take the step.